You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Darmok, and I'm Chris from South Carolina.
I think that was quite weird, you see, because you had short A's, but other than that, you had like long vowels elsewhere. So half of this sounded okay and half of it sounded weird. And I'm James from London.
Lou from Nebraska. Nebraska, where it's rainy.
Nebraska, where the wheat falls.
Yeah, it's a little rainy right now. Hello, guys. Were you trying your British accent there, Chris?
No, I was just being ridiculous. I read your instead of your, and I just went with it.
Okay, first thing I've got to do is to turn off the script thing, go back into there.
I think I give you a hard time about this every time I'm on.
Yeah.
The grammar Nazi in me comes out. It's real harsh.
Battle Bridge scripts. Do you want to open this as read-only? That way I don't screw it up. I say no this time. And let's put a apostrophe. No, it's Y-O-U apostrophe R-E or Y-O-U-R apostrophe E. Which is it, Chris?
It is Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. You drop the A, you bring the two together, and you use the apostrophe in between.
Save it. And there. Won't happen again, sir. Typical for...
I'll still probably read it as your.
Yeah, probably, next. But typical, the teacher corrects me. Nice. What? So,
have we been out of school for how long?
88. 29 years?
That's almost how old I am.
Really? When were you born? What year?
86. I'm a baby.
I was walking across the stage when you were about learning to walk.
Yeah.
Hey, pretty cool. Yes, we might have both been in diapers. Anyway. Doc, what about you? What you been doing lately?
So I've been on holiday, so I had 2 weeks off from work, which was great. But that time seemed to disappear very, very quickly. And now I'm back at work and now it is painful. But anyway, lots of exciting stuff going on. We've got a new election in England, or in the UK. I should probably be more accurate than that. So we're having lots of fun over here. It's going to be awesome. The next 50 days. Awesome.
Yeah. Do y'all just get to do that? Like, whenever you want, you can push for a quick election.
Yep.
What's it about?
A general election. Yeah. A full election of the House of Commons, yeah. Which is our main legislative people. I mean, we do have other people in the Lords, which is a little bit funny, which is people get appointed, but effectively it's the equivalent of the of Congress going up.
Mm.
And you have to select a prime minister from sitting in Congress.
Hmm. Okay.
So the hope there is that because she has people on her side, she'll get reelected real fast, and then...
That's what they're playing on at the moment. Because what ends up happening in the UK is that you technically don't elect the prime minister. You elect a member of parliament, and then you have a representative democracy, and then they select a leader emerges, although we have been drifting towards a much more kind of presidential style, at least in terms of how the parties position themselves. Anyway, we had a bit of a mishap last year when one of the prime minister had to resign due to issues, and the current prime minister took over, and I think that somewhere between you want to find your own source of legitimacy plus reckon you can get away with going back to the country and coming back with a larger majority, somewhere between those two, there's probably the truth.
This has been the British Politics Hour with James and Chris and Lou's phone.
Yeah, they canceled softball practice tonight because of the wet fields. Okay. I better send that to my daughter so she doesn't have to worry too much. Well, I could do that while we're talking, but... Okay, so everything's going good for you guys, right? Is that what I heard?
Swimmingly.
It's been a strange... But hey, congratulate us. We've had two shows published in a week and a half.
A week and a half.
Yeah, I think it went 5 days before the last one came out. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow. I must have been really on top of it.
I know that I listened to them.
Yeah.
Pretty close together. And they were fun. Your friend, what is his name?
Brian.
Dunmore.
Brian. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Brian, but then I was like, no, is that your other host? Anyway,
also Brian,
I didn't want to, say anything out of turn, but, yeah, Brian is very interesting cat, man. I really love all of his insights on the Klingons. I mean, I don't know how much of it to take seriously, but I'm just like, this is neat that a guy like is so sure of his Klingon knowledge and just throws it out there. It's great. I love it.
He's sure of his Klingon knowledge, all right. Yes. Yeah. We've talked about this a few times. Way back in the Lou Trek Show days, there was an episode, I call it the Klingon Diatribe. He was going to school us on Klingons. He was going to tell us a lot more about Klingons. And if you're looking at the video here, this is about what happened. I'm going to get this here. He was literally like... And then the House of something, something, something came out to the, and he's like going from page to page to page. And I'm watching this on video and I'm like, what the hell is this? And I stopped. I actually stopped as he was like, Brian. Yeah. What are you doing? Are you like reading word for word about the history of Klingons? Like I didn't mean that. I mean like, tell us a little bit about Klingons. That was a bizarre show. And while during the middle of that, the computer blue screened. The computer actually self-destructed over it. And half the show is gone. But it was funny. The Klingon Diatribe. But yes, he's awesome. He's animated. He's funny. He's an interesting cat, like you said.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun listen to those two episodes because I really love the Klingon stories, and I know a lot of people don't love them from TNG, but I find them fascinating. I think that the lore is really interesting, and I think that they put a lot into it, and a lot of people just want to sell it short as kind of mindless and not all there. But he brings the fascinating depth that I would hope would be there.
Oh yeah, so. Yeah. That first time I talked to him. He's a Dabahar master in the House of something, and this is what we as Klingons, and I'm like, hold it, I gotta ask you this question: are you really a Klingon? Like, if Gene Roddenberry never existed, would you still be a Klingon? And that's when, no, I'm not that crazy. It's his persona. It's what he comes off of as. But for a minute there, I thought, oh boy, what have I done? So. Oh, but anyway. We are ready to roll when you are.
All right. Well, the synopsis for tonight's show is Picard is captured. then trapped on a planet with an alien captain who speaks a metaphorical language incompatible with the universal translator. They must learn to communicate with each other before a deadly planetary beast overwhelms them. This is the second episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is September 30th, 1991. Written by Philip Lazebink and Joe Manosky, and directed by Winrich Kolbe. Guest stars include Paul Winfield as Captain Dathan, Richard Allen as the Temerian First Officer, Ashley Judd as Ensign Leffler, Cole Meany as Miles O'Brien, and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So, what do we think of this episode?
Ashley.
That's not what I think of this episode. I didn't even remember that she was in this episode, and I was like, that's cool. Because she makes another appearance in a Wesley episode, right?
Right. And I really didn't know who she was at that time. I mean, this has to be one of the earliest things she's done. Maybe.
Is it like a River Phoenix situation? Wasn't he in one of the movies? Crazy.
Star Trek movies?
Yeah.
No, I didn't think so.
River Phoenix was in one of these Star Treks.
No. No. Okay. Someone Google away. I didn't think he was. not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, all right. So what do you think about this one so far? Chris.
I absolutely love this episode. I think that this is one of the great episodes of The Next Generation, and it should be held up on a pedestal of how you write something that, despite some technical weirdness and oddities, is actually really still good and still gets the point across, and you almost don't even think about the holes when you are watching it at all, because it's just so engaging, and it just ropes you in. It's a great episode.
All right, Doc.
Okay. I'm not in love with this episode. I don't think I'm in love with this episode anyway. I know that there are quote-unquote, you know, standout Next Generation episodes that are out there, and everyone has to love, and that includes this one, but I've never quite it's never quite managed to, like, you know, touch me in the way that I would expect it to in order to be deemed a great episode. And the more I watch it and the more I think about it, the more I think, is it really a great episode? I'm not necessarily convinced. I mean, there is like a nexus of a particularly interesting situation going on. But beyond that, I'm not entirely sure. And when I was watching it like earlier today, perhaps slightly more critically, I think that they take a while to cotton onto the fact. I think they become too, well, Picard in particular becomes too smug once he's kind of worked it out. And then I started, in my mind at least, thinking about, well, could this even actually happen? And I came to the conclusion that no, it couldn't happen in any way, shape, or form. And then I thought, well, okay, if it can't happen, that can be okay, as long as it's telling something, you know, deeper or something, you know, more true. That is, you're just using it as an analogy. But I really couldn't really stumble onto what they were trying to say here. So I look forward to Chris correcting me throughout this next hour or so. But before I get attacked, let me hand this over to you, Lou. Where do you stand?
This is a strange one for me as well. I've always liked it in the past. I still do. This is kind of like... I'm kind of like a domestic violence suspect. I love her, but for some reason I can't stop hitting her type of thing. I don't know why.
That's a terrible analogy.
But it's true, though. I mean, I like it, but yet for some reason... There's really not much to say about this, and
It's, you know, two people who can't speak each other's language get together and draw cartoons almost, but only it's not that.
Oh, I disagree completely. There's so much depth to this episode. This is about cultures and the clash of cultures and how two cultures who can't completely understand each other or don't understand each other all together can come together and be peaceable. It's about language. It's about beauty and struggle and the wonder of figurative language. It's about all of these fantastic things we're talking about. Yeah. This is great.
I agree 100%. For some reason, it seemed like for a while the pacing is a little slow, but then it kicks in and then it goes again. I do love the music. I thought the music during some of the scenes was phenomenal, especially the fight scenes with the beast of Eladril, I guess you could call it. Do you guys think that maybe it took them too long to figure out how they were communicating, even for Data? You know, Data says twice, well, you know, we could use some study on this. And it takes the second time for Riker to say, yeah, yeah, let's do that. I don't know. It just seemed like, do you think maybe they figured the metaphor thing out a little too late?
I would say that because they were focused on the computer figuring it out, no. Because the computer is very logical, straightforward. It processes things logically. And this is very much a figurative language that relies heavily on innuendo. Now, we could talk a lot about the big loophole that how does this language even spring up? You know, how do they, like, that's a huge plot hole that I don't think you can ever fill, but I don't really care to either.
I have to say that, I mean, personally, I think where I started coming to is I'm thinking, okay, the ship that they have already has sensors on it, right? And they scan a planet. And when they scan a planet, it doesn't come back as 62% nitrogen and 12% oxygen or something. What is it going to come back as? Like, you know, Darmok and Jarada Tanaka, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense for that to be their only method of communication. You need to have something more abstract.
They'd have to have some scientific references. Logical.
Everybody's got to know who Darmok is and what Tanaka is.
But the linguistics of it is definitely, like I say, huge plot hole. Like, how is this going to work at all?
No, but I think it's worthwhile to park that, because otherwise I'm going to become like, you know, very pedantic guy that's going to close a lot of these things off very early. So I think we should accept at least that there is this, you know, there is this other culture and they have a way of communicating and we have trouble relating to them. And really all they're trying to do here, right, is they're trying to roll back the magical universal translator that makes this issue, you know, completely absent from any other story that they have. That's really what they're trying to do. They want to set it up in a position that they have to basically de-invent the universal translator.
And right. And after the original NX-01, no one thought to be a linguist. I mean, it seems like after all these years that we've been trying to communicate with these people, that there wasn't another Hoshi Sato.
Yeah, but we do this with lots of things, Lou. We come up with some technology that can do the job, and then people forget how to do the job. So we also don't do that with some things. You know, like there are still people that live around where I live that can ride a horse and can, you know, connect a horse to a carriage. But a lot less people today can do that than could do it 100 years ago. And you certainly wouldn't carry a carriage expert with you, you know, if you were going on a space exploration. So I would imagine that this is just something that they've handed over at this point.
So, Lou, are you complaining that this is basically the same story as Spock's brain?
No. I'm trying to think of how that relates.
They had what? In Spock's brain, right? They didn't. Isn't that the one on the original series where they had the huge technology that they then lost control over and then they had to relearn it?
Yeah, you have to go into the teacher every time you want to learn how to do something again. Yeah, it's like, yeah, because that was Bones. You know, it's child's play. Child's play. Let me just get this brain wired up. And as he's going along, he's like...
Anyway, tangent there.
Yes, but there's another thing. Why doesn't he just go back to the stupid teacher and learn it again? But anyway, go on. Well, yeah. Okay. I get what you're saying. Yeah, I guess so. Okay, so let's see here. The ships arrive to chit-chat with the race that no one has ever been able to communicate with before, but they speak using metaphors. Did we figure spoilers. That out? Yeah, no kidding. Wow, what spoilers? This is 30-some years old. Did we really figure that out at the time, or did we... I mean, what was... I don't remember, honestly, way back then, but what was your thoughts? What are these people doing type of thing?
The first time I saw it, that was not in my thought at all. I didn't even realize that those were not words until Data says, oh, it seems like this is a place or this is a person from their histories, right? So that's when I started to pick, oh, I get it. But that's, I think that this kind of rewards rewatch at least once or twice, because, you know, there's that moment at the beginning that's really, really funny now, knowing that it is a language of metaphor, where he says, is it Taymark in the winter? Mm-hmm. And he yells at him. He just says, Taymark, which, you know, is like, shut the heck up. Calm yourself down. Freeze like a river in winter. You know, you stop flowing with your mouth. There, and it speaks to, again, the depth of what a metaphor can be, like Taymark in winter. There's a lot of meaning that could flow forth from that, and you could say it in different contexts and have it mean different things, which I think is a beautiful thing to this language. I don't think that it would work, like I said, in my plot hole argument a couple minutes ago. I don't think it would work as a whole language, and Dr. James definitely spoke to another issue with it. How do you do science? How do you do math? How do you do these technical things and get this far technically advanced only on metaphor? But as far as that goes, it's really beautiful and it's really interesting to think about the different things that they could use and how they would use them and the nuance of meaning that each story would have. It's also frustrating because what if someone interpreted that story completely differently than you do, Lou? You know, what if they saw all the pictures, mm-hmm. they experienced all the things, and that story to them, Taymark in winter, meant, hey, you know, go ice skating instead of, hey, shut up, or hey, calm yourself down, you know? So there's also that piece, but...
Actually, Chris, so you've actually brought something up which I hadn't really considered yet, or at least you sparked something in my mind. And now I'm going to give this episode a lot of credit for something, which is that if we think that this story is about people learning to communicate with each other, whereas previously they didn't have that ability. If you want the viewer to go through the same process, and you mentioned about rewatching, what exactly can you do? And I think it's really out of the question to expect the viewer to learn a second language in half an hour or something like that, right? That there's no kind of like emotional connection there, and there's no kind of like aha moment. But if you do, if your whole storytelling mechanism here is that you are going to find a way so that you don't understand these people at the beginning, but you understand them at the end, having this kind of, you know, this particular kind of gimmick as to how they communicate, and it could have been a metaphor, it could have been saying things backwards, whatever it happens to be, I think it does become a clever way whereby upon second and third watching, you can be ahead. You can understand these guys in their initial opening exchange. And I think that that's, I think that that's quite clever. I don't think they could have done this any other way, or I can't think of another way that it would have been so satisfying to have this kind of piece of information kind of unlocked for the viewer so that they can actually understand, whereas previously it kind of came out as all gibberish. And yeah, and as Lou mentioned, you don't know if they're talking gibberish or if they're actually talking, you know, proper nouns or what they're trying to say. You kind of, you hear things like, you know, on the and at and stuff, but you don't quite know whether it's English or if it's, you know, you're just hearing things in their sentence.
But do you think with Data's trillions and trillions of calculations per second, he couldn't have figured out all the things that they had said, Taymak, you know?
Okay, so
couldn't they put all those words together and come up with something?
So here's the thing. I think you have to accept a lot in this episode. And what I think you have to accept is that Data is broken and that Troy is broken. So again, you once again have... your Troi character is too powerful, so you have to assume that she's an idiot and is not competent. And unfortunately, in this case, Data is too powerful. I think there was a particular instance where it was Troi and Data, and they were talking about, you know, they had Darmok at Tanagra. And it's like, okay, well, let's look for everything called Darmok. And they found 47 things, I seem to remember. And it didn't occur to them until Troi put it forward that, well, maybe we should also cross-reference it against Tanagra. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to do this. And I think that, yeah, I think unfortunately Data's a little bit neutered in this episode.
Well, they went through what was Darmok, and they only, out of 47, they listened to 4, and they stopped at the Chantel or something.
You would have thought that, you would have thought like an android with infinite resources would have a bit more patience, right?
Right. No, I think she stopped it, didn't she? Hold on. They were going too far. Going too far. My brain, I need some chocolate. But, yeah, I mean, then the Tanagra is an island off of Chantel 4 or 3 or something like that. How many other references in these words have Chantel in them? And I think they could have came up with it a little bit faster. But here's another thing we learn. Worf is an idiot. He's always getting shot down.
He's not an idiot. He's just a
creature. I don't think he's an idiot. He's
great. They just shoot him down all the time.
At the beginning, did they shoot him down when he said they could be going? Like, they asked him his opinion specifically. Yeah. I actually found this to be a little bit against type for Worf. Now, they do shoot him down at certain points, but yeah. You know, I mean, he's the one that sows the seed of fear because that's culturally appropriate for him to do at this moment. Like, he's obviously got war on the brain because he's a Klingon. So,
Okay. So let's say we can't communicate with them. So what do we do? How about kidnap the Federation captain and force them to fight a beast on whatever planet they ended up on? I mean,
that's kind of option 2, right, on standard procedures.
Yes. But I'm shocked that Riker didn't start firing on that ship quicker. I don't know, for some reason, he comes off as, you take my captain, I'm going to kick your ass.
But 100 years, like, I also think of him as a thoughtful person. So he's got to be thinking, these people have been peaceable for 100 years. They've never attacked us. And if they were going to attack us, why would they just attack this one person? Are they going to take us one by one down to the planet and have us, you know, like, I think that he would be thinking through a lot of those things before he would just try to start shooting. Plus, they knew that it was a bigger, badder beast. You know, they knew that they were a little tiny guy up against this big, tough guy. So that keeps you from fighting a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. But even my Chihuahua with no teeth sure loves to pick a fight with something. So, all right. But anyway, so down on the planet, what's the Tamarian do? He tries to give Picard a knife. I'd have taken it. I mean, if he thinks the guy's going to attack him, at least have the knife that he's offering you, right?
Can you imagine this with Kirk? Like, if he had thrown that knife to Kirk, the first thing Kirk's going to do is he's going to squat down in, like, warrior position or, you know, full horse, and he's going to have that knife out in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
You get kind of a different dynamic. I like that Picard did this. It's very Picard of him. I wonder what Sisko would have done in this situation. Like, would Sisko have grabbed the knife and just run at him and then, you know, got taken down? Or, you know, and then Janeway, of course, we all know, nobody knows what she would do. She's a wild card. It depends on what day it is of the week, what she's going to do. But we know exactly what Kirk would do, and we have some idea of what Sisko would do, and nobody cares about Archer. So.
And actually, it's interesting. When I was watching this, I had flashbacks to various TOS episodes. I think that the way that the episode is structured is very kind of TOS-y. So, first of all, it's the captain is taken off the ship. Now, realistically, that doesn't happen with Picard. He doesn't get involved in that kind of stuff. But then the other kind of conceit that they had, which I suppose is not quite as jarring as some of the TOS episodes, where they actually kind of, you know, view things like in arena on the view screen, but they had the crew monitoring and providing commentary and almost sitting back and watching the episode rather helplessly. And I kind of felt that was a very kind of TOS-like structure to put in place. I'm not meant as a criticism or anything, but it's just it seemed to be, yeah, it seemed to echo various things like Arena in my mind.
Yeah, no, I thought that it was definitely, it had a TOS flair, and it's very episodic. Like, you could take this episode by itself. You need no precursors. You need no prior information. I could show this to any one of my friends who doesn't care about Star Trek, and they would be able to get the whole story and grasp the whole idea of it. So it's very TOS in that way as well. I think it's, yeah.
Oh, actually, so let me, you have given this a slight ajar entry into something that I did not raise last week, Lou. We didn't speak about this, but funky new titles, Lou. It's the season 5 funky titles, right?
I don't know what
with you... the whooshy thing with the blue on where it comes up with Star Trek Next Generation now has like a shadow behind it.
Oh, really? Yeah, no, I.
What do you mean, really?
Are you serious? I never realized that. Now you're gonna have make me look. Darn it.
No, but I mean, so when Chris mentioned that you can put this anywhere and you would, you know, you can watch it episodically, the only reason why flashes out has been season 5 is for two things. One, it's got the little kind of the wave thing behind Star Trek Next Generation and that makes it like look a bit 3D. And the other one, it's got Picard's it's got this like little coat jumper thing.
That is
awesome, which I find very cute.
I like that. I like that new uniform on him.
I have that action figure and I think it's great.
I want the coat. I want the jacket.
I mean, why did he get it? I mean, it's only this episode that he has the one with like leather along the top, and then it goes on to a more a softer kind of top part.
Like crushed velvet.
Yeah, that's right.
Hmm. Makes you wonder, did Starfleet approve? Hmm.
I have no clue. I feel the same way about Picard's jacket as I feel about Kirk's green shirt. You know, like, you know when he's got that on that it's like, it's badass time. You know, like, he's not he's not playing around that episode.
Yeah.
So is this his, I mean, I think it would be very sad if this was his equivalent of the Cisco goatee. It's Picard's woolly jumper.
Woolly jumper. Well, yeah, okay. So you're saying in the intro, it's the when Star Trek The Next Generation comes up, right?
Oh, come on, you must know this. It's got the big, I'm describing it very poorly, but it's got the horrendous like 90s graphics that make it look like it's coming out of the screen. And they did it for season 5, and then they said, nope, not doing that again. And they turned it off at season 6.
Really? Oh! I see what you're saying. The little behind the words.
That describes it better than I could.
Season 5 is my favorite Star Trek, by the way, so I just assume all the titles have that in it.
I had never noticed that, but I like this, actually.
What do you mean you never noticed?
Oh.
Really?
No, what? Yeah, really. No, I never... Matter of fact, how many of us ever watched the intro? How many of us just skip past the intro?
Every week?
I don't skip it. I listen to it, and I watch the first few planets, and then I usually get up and take a restroom break or something.
Well...
Okay, so this does show that I'm a bad human being. I don't watch the DS9 intro. It's too bad. And I think Voyager's one's worse.
I love both of those. I love the nacelles going up.
The nacelles going up is one tiny redeeming feature.
It comes around that planet and it shoots off in Voyager. Oh, come on, okay. Man. And DS9, you got the pylons and the different ships docking at the pylons and it changes almost every season. Come on, man. Come on. You're a terrible human being.
Whilst I'm on the kind of terrible human being list, Enterprise is open.
Let's go further down this road.
I was going to say, let's go. We're going to go for Enterprise.
Enterprise, right? First of all, I'm going to separate the music from the visuals. The visuals are the best opener to any Star Trek series there has been.
I love the visuals.
Absolutely fantastic. They have like the horizon and it blends into the cutting of the map thing. It's fantastic. And here
takes you to the history of space travel.
Absolutely.
I hear a butt coming in.
So here goes. And I'm going to double down. The song's absolutely fine.
Are we 3 for 3 right
three
now?
3 for 3.
Are we 3 for 3?
Love
three
it.
3 people who love the song in this. Oh, love God.
It. Matter of
I
fact.
I love the song, too.
I
love it so much.
I found the extended version of the intro with the full song. What they do is they slow down the visual to fit the entire song. It's on YouTube. Loved it.
That makes me... I need to...
I remember hearing him back in the day of podcasting, man. Richard Smith hated it. Everybody hated the Enterprise. They felt violated or something. But didn't they say that about DS9? There's no space, the final frontier.
People say a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. I love Enterprise's theme. I think the Enterprise's theme is probably the best of all, to be honest with you.
I don't know if I can say that. I prefer orchestral music myself, but I really do love this song. I love the music. I love the message. I love the visual that they put behind it to carry the message forward. It is, I will fully admit that it is schmaltzy. It is absolutely tugging on heartstrings on purpose, but I'm okay with it. Most things in the 90s did that. You know.
All right.
This episode does it.
Anyway, so far our show has been Shaka When the Walls Fell.
No, it's been fantastic.
So Picard trying to make fire. I laughed my ass off at that one. And he gives up and throws the sticks in.
Boy Scout Picard.
You would think he'd be able to do better. Has anyone ever really been able to make fire by rubbing a stick against something?
Yes.
You've done it?
I've never done it personally, but I've seen it.
I mean, humans did it. That's like how we got out of this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you have to have a little bit of a starter. You have to have a lot of friction, and then you have to blow lightly on it. And I think that's Picard is not much of a blower. He doesn't have a good blow job. He's just not good at it.
Okay, let's say you are working at a live bait company, okay, and your job was to put the bait in the box called the baiter.
No, not going there. Not doing that. You already did one bad 6-1. We're not.
So you're the baiter, and there's 3 skill levels. There's the novice, the expert, and never mind. So, Picard trying to make fire. That was pretty funny. And, of course, that was Shaka When the Walls Fell. But what'd you guys think of that?
But then it was Timba with his arms wide.
Yes.
I thought that it was a great piece to kind of take you deeper into it. And I gotta say, I haven't talked about it yet, but I love the character design in this episode. I think that the alien Darmok here is fantastic. I think that the makeup looks great. It's memorable. The fingers, even the hand makeup is good. Mm-hmm. And the knife is beautiful and interesting. So I just think they did a lot of really good design work in this episode, and that's one of the things that makes it work. And then the acting, the guy who plays Darmok, I think does really well, because a lot of this stuff it's carried by him, because it's just silly ridiculousness, you know, like when he's reading this, he's got to be like, what the heck, you know, at first, and he's got to act it. And so I think that he did a good job. Whoever the director was definitely gave him some good guidelines and led him the right way, because he carries this off where it could be silly. He carries it off very well, and it comes across, I think, seriously and has the right temper to it. So,
I agree. You know, Paul Winfield, do we know where he's from? Where's he been in Star Trek before?
Yeah, he's a Reliant captain.
Yeah, Captain Terrell? Or not Terrell. Yeah, he's the one that gets him and Chekhov get the little buggers put in their ears from Khan.
No way! I was just watching Khan last night. I didn't realize that was him. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's great stuff. He's a great actor.
Oh, yeah, so absolutely.
It makes a lot of sense now.
And the directing, and I agree with you, there was one shot that I thought probably played very well. It's when he's offering Picard the knife. Picard's still not taking it. And then the beast comes where he's throwing rocks over the mountain. And you can see the pan of the camera as Datha was his name, I believe. You know, he looks and he starts walking toward the thing. And I thought it was really neat the way they pan the camera to follow his face as he walked toward where the beast was. So they really did a good job on this one. And so Datha gives Picard some fire. That was pretty nice. Or else Picard would have frozen to death. Why couldn't Picard... I mean, Datha is not outwardly trying to attack him. He hasn't done anything to attack him. So let's say in the middle of the night, the guy's just laying there. Would you had kept your distance like Picard does? Or maybe walk a little closer to the fire, a little closer. Hey, let's try and talk about this if we can. What would you guys have done? Would you have done the same thing or done different?
Well, I think that James, with his lack of social wants, he would probably stay far away. And I think I'd probably do the same thing. You wouldn't believe it, but I'm a little bit shy. And especially in a situation like this where it's an alien I don't know and I know I can't communicate with, I would probably feel weird. And I would stay probably not as far as I could away. I'd want to see him because he's the only safety net I have here, apparently. He's not attacking me and he's got fire and he's got all these other things. But I'm not going to go right up to his fire. I'm not going to sit right next to him. Like, I'm going to be wary. That's just how I am.
Hmm. And James?
Yeah, can you hear me, Lou?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I did mention something before, but I didn't think it got picked up. What I just mentioned is that I don't know what you're expecting from Picard, whether or not he would actually end up snuggling up with the guy around the campfire to keep warm. I'm not entirely sure I would go that far. But I do think that Picard is further back than I would imagine he should be. Given the, not all communication is verbal, right? And even when it's verbal, it's not about understanding the words. It's also about, inferring whether they're shouting at you or not. So I think there's enough non-verbal communication and the way that things are being said that clearly suggests that this guy isn't a threat. And I think the card makes an offhand comment about, oh, you're going to murder me in my bed. It's unlikely, right? Mm-hmm. That's not really on the cards. It's, and I think that he keeps his defenses up a little bit too long. I think there are lots of things, considering that they can communicate and they can sound and they can say things like, arms open or hands open. That's in itself a sign of offering, a sign of friendship, a sign of, not being armed. And I don't think that, I think Picard artificially stands back. But I understand why they do it, and that's because they need it to be like that at this point in the story.
Hmm.
So, it is what it is.
Because I would have thought, why hasn't this guy with two knives attacked me yet? I mean, isn't that why they brought me here, to fight me? Why hasn't he even tried? So if that's the case, maybe I'm wrong. And I probably, as the night would have went on, I would have tried to get a little closer and a little closer with, like you said, your hands open. Maybe point at the rock and point at your butt and say, I'm going to sit here.
Pour some bourbon in his soup and start singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And...
Fur, Jaka. So, okay, good. But as I said, it kind of lends to what I was saying earlier, that it, for some reason it just takes him too long to discover these things or to realize what it is they mean. So, I like the ritualistic thing that the Datha was doing when he's putting out little pieces of metal and touching his head. Obviously, those are, they were surrounding him. For some reason. What were you guys thinking about that?
He's looking at you, Chris.
Well, I keep waiting to let you jump in, James, because I feel like I jump in right after he talks on every single one. But I don't know. I didn't think a lot about it. I thought it was definitely ritual. I thought it was interesting. It spoke to the fact that these people had rituals, and they probably have to have a lot of rituals so that they can convey some of the meaning of the different stories that they have. So it has to be ritualistic. It has to have some type of physical thing attached to it so that they can make sense of it. I didn't really think much about it.
You know that raises another point, and I better say it before I forget it. How do they school their children? Because the children won't know the metaphor to get an idea of, let's say, when Picard tells them that Datha was killed, they all pull out their knives, they touch it and touch her forehead. But they can't say, if somebody dies, pull out your knife, touch it, and then touch your forehead. It'd be like, you know, Bob and Joe, Shaka when the walls fell, Bob and the knife grab the forehead thing. I mean, it's really weird how they would train their children to speak.
They could probably do it through, again, a ritual type thing, theater, visual arts, those types of things where you show things. But again, there is the plot hole of the fact that that's all experiential, and the kid might experience it in a different way than they intend it to. But all language is living, and so maybe Shaka with the walls fell doesn't mean exactly, you know, Shaka. It doesn't mean exactly what it means that particular day as it meant to the first group of people who saw it. It might have taken on extra meanings that they then convey through art, and then those kids take a different, like a slightly alter tack to it, but essentially the core concept would probably remain pretty similar over time. Mm-hmm. Or you could tie it back in some way.
Having said all this, are we sure that they don't also have like a secondary language, which is what they get taught in, and it's only then like later that you express things through like the metaphor? There's no, if that's your primary form of communication, it's not necessarily true to say that there wouldn't be, for example, like a more abstract form of grammar that allows them to convey certain things that have to be expressed in that way.
Yeah, there has to be some other type, because he had, like, he'll say Timba with his arms wide. So like arms has to have some type of meaning, you know, so they teach their kid arms and they teach their kid wide.
Yeah,
so like
wide.
Those words have meaning.
And also, their, I mean, language. The thing about wide as well, right? I mean, it's not like a noun. It is like an abstraction that you take that connects various things that are not related. So arms will be wide, roads will be wide, rivers will be wide. It's not, I find it hard to believe that it's all just, you know, citing, you know, oh, I watched this, you know, I was told this story, or I happened to hear this thing, this adventure. It's not that they're not just labeling things. They have to have something deeper than that. And then the conceit of the episode that's how they communicate externally doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only form that they would ever have. And maybe these guys are just, you know, so confused at why no one would get the reference that you know, they don't try anything more basic or more kind of childlike.
You know, I think Chris is right. It's all open to interpretation. Like if you have a burglar in your house and you call 911 or 999, and you try to explain there's a burglar in my house, but the person on the other end doesn't quite get the reference of, you know, criminal something, and he instead sends an ambulance because, you know, I can't even come up with a metaphor for the metaphor. It would make no sense. Everybody on that planet must know every reference given for it to have any meaning.
Well, that assumes that everybody on the planet speaks this language. So this particular group of people speaks this particular form of the language. I like what you said there, James. I think that definitely could be the case. For the purposes of this episode, though, what they present is to show us, I think, first, the beauty of being able to understand someone when you can't. And that's kind of the point I think they want to drive home is, here's an experience for you, the viewer, of not being able to understand and moving through the paces with Picard as he understands. And you do it from two different facets. You do it from Riker's facet and you do it from Picard's. And so while it's interesting, and this is part of what I love about Star Trek, it's interesting to kind of walk down those roads of whether there are abstractions or there are not abstractions. It's also not necessary for the plot of this particular story. So I find it very interesting, and I would love to walk down that road and see what these, like, I would love to have seen maybe a season 7 or season 8 could still be done episode where they revisit these aliens and they find out more about their language and get more into the linguistics of it and explore kind of that kind of stuff. But for this particular episode, they gave us just enough for it to not be completely off the wall, but definitely serve the purposes that they wanted.
Gee, a season 8, huh? I wonder who else...
On more than Twitter.
I was going to say, who else ever thought of something like a season 8? Who was it that told you guys, now that Voyager's back, why not have the fans or the listeners come up with a season 8 plot and you guys would review it?
You didn't tell me that because I wasn't on Delta Quadrant.
Oh, no, I told him. Let me think here. Who was it? I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, that's what I thought about, is that they should come up with a season 8. And I always thought I told you that, but I guess not. Maybe we can do it, James. Come up with a season 8.
TNG season 8. You guys review episodes that don't even exist.
Yes. Well,
I mean, technically there are 4 films, right? We could watch the films.
Actually, we will. But I'm saying that, yeah, no, that was my thought. Maybe I never told you about it, but I thought they should come up with a season 8, and everyone who was listening to the show would submit a plot that they would review. But it didn't happen. But anyway, that's a different story. So Worf and a non-speaking role, what?
Sorry, I was about to say, but they get home at the end of season 7. So
exactly, but that's...
it's kind of the end of the film.
That's the problem. I mean, nothing. There's no... They come out of an exploding Borg and poof, it's over.
Yeah, I know it's a controversial statement and there's a bit of a tangent to make at this stage, but I don't think... You can't follow up getting home, because that's the whole arc of the story, and I don't want to see, you know, Chakotay filing for Social Security after he realizes he hasn't got a job anymore, and I don't want to find out that, you know, Harry Kim's, you know, headed off to be a loser in, you know, some type of minor celebrity reality TV show that they might put him on for a year or two before falling into a crack addiction. You know, I think that it's good to leave that up to the imagination rather than to think of actually what really would have happened to these guys.
Or at least a movie.
Well, this is to Harry Kim's crack addiction.
It's a light one, too. Okay. Worf and a non-speaking role person take a shuttle to the planet to rescue the captain. Psych. They get fired on. Now, here's a question. See what you guys agree. Worf says, I may be able to land, but I will not be able to take off. All right, Mr. Worf, come back to the ship. I think he should have went on. I think he should have kept on going down to the planet. They might not have landed successfully, but if they did, then the captain has help now.
Yeah, but. I think that Riker is already pushing the boundaries of what would be acceptable to Starfleet by even staying. When the aggression came out and they got one man on the planet, you know, the good of the many outweighs the good of the few, and he can always cut and run if they can't get Picard back. But if he sends two more people down, what's he going to do next? Send two more to get them? Like, it's just, it becomes a situation of how many people am I willing to lose? Am I going to send Worf down there when there's no way out? And then I lose three people instead of just the one. Like, I think that he's just thinking about the odds and the numbers. But part of me wants to agree with you, because I want to say, absolutely, you send Worf down and Worf can fight and keep the captain safe until they can finally get this thing settled up in the sky. But then the other part of me is like, well, you know, discretion is the better part of valor. So let's not send two more people to their doom, potentially.
Let me just jump in here and say that I think Reich is generally an idiot in this episode. And I don't think that, you know, the story, right, what you get from what is trying to be put across in this episode really cannot involve Worf turning up with a bunch of machine guns and, you know, to protect the captain. That's really not the point of it. And I got a little frustrated that they spent too much time on the Enterprise trying to do stuff and look busy. And I know that the question is, well, what would you do otherwise? But I don't know. I think that maybe it was a sign that the story on the planet itself wasn't fully rounded enough to be able to carry the entirety of the episode, or whether they thought that wouldn't have been a good idea for whatever reason. But I always felt bad about going back to the ship, going back to hear Riker get upset about certain things, and, you know, wanted to know why we can't beam him through, and even the attempt at beaming him through. I that was directly responsible for the guy dying, and no one gets their comeuppance at the end. I would rather have not had that storyline and had it more, you know, much more focused on the planet.
Okay.
I still think it's there for a purpose, though. It builds that sense of, like, when you don't understand something, what do you do, right? And so they're just scratching and scraping to both try to understand it and also solve this problem that they have. And sometimes in solving a problem, you create a lot more problems. And I don't know that I need them to get their comeuppance, but I can't imagine that they wouldn't have done something on the ship. They wouldn't have been trying and groping to get their captain back if that's what they're going to do. And that's what they chose to do. And so they're going to do everything they can in their power. And so if they don't use everything that's at their hands, I don't think that necessarily makes Riker an idiot. I think it definitely makes him ignorant, and ignorance can cause you to do things that maybe you shouldn't have done. But he was doing what he thought was best in the moment. And they have these transporters. Why wouldn't they try to use them? They have these shuttles. Why wouldn't they try to use them? You know, I feel like this is them covering all the bases of the ship's in the air. Are they trying everything they can to solve the problem? And so the story just kind of plays out naturally from there.
No, I do agree with that. And frankly, if they weren't trying to do this, then the natural question is, well, what are they doing on the ship all this time? I would just have, I don't know, I've kind of, I don't know where I come from on this one. I just didn't quite feel that the way the Riker was reacting was the way I would have approached it, and the way like a diplomat would have approached it. And that's maybe one thing that I think is often lacking away from the Picard character. There's not much in the way of diplomacy. And I've mentioned it before that I think that really Troy should be an expert in diplomacy, given, like, given all of her
the emotional stuff. Yeah, I agree.
And that's something that, you know, let's just say that Data and Troy had to take the lead on this, and let's just say that they ended up having a lot more communication rather than just looking at the tapes and records of them shouting. Let's say that they did spend a lot of time with them, and they tried to learn, and they had pitfalls, and they had misunderstandings, and you know, then Data happened to annoy one of them, and then Data got his head cut off or whatever, you know, obviously recoverable by the end of the episode. But I would have preferred more involvement from on the diplomatic side than just them having to cover their bases by saying, you know, can we beam them up? No, not really. Can we fire against their emission thing? Yeah, probably, but give us an hour to sort it out. I just feel that that was the wrong way to approach this.
I mean, maybe it is, but I think that's exactly what Riker would have done. So Riker's not a diplomat, so I don't know what else he could have done with it aside from Riker trying everything he can to beat the door down. Riker is the knight in shining armor. He wants to be, and so he has to follow the character that they've created for him over 5 years. And I agree that it's unfortunate they don't have another diplomat to say to him, hey, Riker, maybe we shouldn't try to beat the door down. Maybe we should wait this out, or maybe you should let us do our job, what Data and Troy were trying to do. Maybe you should let us do this so that we can figure out what they're actually saying. Nobody's dying, nobody's dead, you know, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, that isn't what they did, so...
Okay.
I do agree, though, that that might have been better, to have a voice of reason saying, Riker, you can't beat the door down. You know, you can't just blow it up.
I mean,
C4 is not going to work here.
I mean, I often come back to my frustrations with how poorly the Troy character was kind of handled. And this kind of episode is a very clear that there's like an open goal here that they could have used the Troy character in a much, much more constructive and much more significant way. And it doesn't. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they've had that episode with Dixon Hill where they, you know, Troy and Picard have a discussion about language. There was more input on language and how that, you know, verbal communication in that episode from Troy than there was in this episode. And I just feel like sometimes they really dropped the ball with Troy. And, you know, it's not her fault that she's useless.
Mm.
It's the writer's fault in a way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I fully agree with that.
Okay. And River Phoenix was not in Star Trek that I can find.
I know. He was in Indiana Jones. And I don't know why those two things were mashed together in my brain. Indiana Jones to Star Wars to Star... I don't know. I have no idea why my brain was broken.
Well, he was
on
in...
that point, but it was certainly broken on that point.
He was in Stand By Me with Will Wheaton, so... Maybe. Okay, so Picard wakes up in the morning. Obviously, he's not dead. And he finds the Temarian missing. And while he's gone, hey, let's go through his diary and see what he's been writing about. In the meantime, I want to try that frozen dessert called Darmok on Tasma 5 or something like that. Remember all that?
Did I mention a frozen dessert?
Yeah. Darmok was a frozen dessert on Tasma 5 or Tasmea 5 or something like that. But so this is kind of where the plot really starts to thicken because, you know, Picard wakes up, he's gone, and he reappears still with this knife in his hand. Darmok! And that's when we finally get that beast coming out, throwing rocks over the mountains. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that whole scene, all of this is really interesting. I kind of wish that... So this speaks to another kind of point that the episode has, which is what links would you personally go through to ensure the peace that you want kept on? So they hadn't been able to speak for 100 years. This guy, Dathan, obviously really, really wanted them to understand. And he wanted them to understand and be able to move forward with their culture so much that he was willing to give his very life for it. So there's this idea of sacrifice in order to help other people understand your culture. And he was willing to give the ultimate sacrifice so that Starfleet could understand his culture, which I think is kind of a cool point, too. That this episode presents, it just kind of adds a layer to the whole deal.
Okay, Doc.
I don't have a huge amount to add.
Okay,
let me edit that. Anything to add?
Anything at all? Do you think there's any way they could have possibly beaten this beast? It seemed like it was completely unstoppable. Like,
I bet Worf could.
You think?
I don't know. No, this is one that Worf would have gotten knocked down by to show how powerful it is, right? The Borg, it's every other big bad that even the Klingon can't take him. Everybody run.
Yeah. Because it seemed like once that scattering field was taken down, I don't know, I think Kirk would have just tried to destroy that beast. Full phasers.
Kirk would have beat the tar out of him and would have won it with a pipe to the back, even though he's a superhuman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, during the fight, Picard gets knocked down first, and then all of a sudden that thing just beats the crap out of the Temarian while Riker's trying to beam Picard away. What would Picard have done?
Picard would have had quite a few lumps on that bald pate.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that just beats the crap out of that Temarian. And he survives for a while, but eventually dies throughout the night. So, anyway. So, the Temarian is dead. And now it's... I wonder why... Does the Beast... What am I thinking of? The Storyteller. DS9.
Yeah, in season one. Yeah. I was going to say great episode.
Yeah, it is a pretty good episode, but it reminds me...
Not really.
No. No, I like... I do like kind of like the Storyteller in a sense, but, you know... Anyway, but the point...
I think I gave it a 4. That's how terrible it was. I took a point off, so it must have been pretty awful.
Oh, yeah? But the point is the Beast comes out only during the day?
Yeah, they don't go into the lore of the Beast all that much. And again, I think it's... The only purpose it serves is to put them both in a situation where they have to come together. And they have to rely on one another.
Okay.
They don't describe much about it, I don't think. I mean, I might be missing something. I only watched the episode twice.
I gotcha. Okay. Let's see. So it's time to end the stalemate. And they try to fire on the ship. They knock down the particle beam, but of course now the Enterprise is going to get the crap kicked out of it real quick. I mean, they make quick work of the ship, don't they? Oh, I forgot to talk about Gilgamesh.
I wasn't aware of Gilgamesh. What?
The Epic of Gilgamesh is an epic poem from antiquity. It's actually the oldest known written work that we have currently. So they found it written on stone tablets, I believe.
But here's the issue, that if I had been the other guy, being told this as I was dying, I would have just slapped Picard round his head and said, "Look, that's just Darmok and Gerarda Tanagra. Why are you retelling me that?" I mean, talk about...
Does this conversation happen over the death, or does it happen the...
It happens over the death.
Yeah, okay. While he's dying, yeah.
And then, actually, Picard then says, actually, it's not quite Darmok and Gerarda Tanagra, because one of us dies, and it's not me. And then he goes, oh. And then...
Oh, yeah, come on. Come on, James. But this is the point, though. This is all that Dathan wanted.
Yeah.
This is the whole reason he did this. Yep. He did this knowing he could possibly die, but this was his entire purpose. He was like, you know what? I'm out here. This is what I need to do. And he didn't put anybody else in danger.
But Picard shouldn't tease him with this story of death. I mean, okay, maybe I'm being a bit too harsh here. Maybe actually the story here is that both civilizations share the same kind of story, and in one of them, they happen to also have a sacrifice, which, you know, now this Adian has effectively... lived himself, and kind of, you know, the story of Picard and what's the guy called?
Datha
at that particular planet.
Eladril.
I mean, maybe the commonality of the stories here, whether it's on the Temerian side, on the Earth side, or as part of these two meeting, maybe the commonality of all of that is really what we should take away from this.
Well, I think, yeah, Chris is right. He went down there exactly to try and communicate with Picard, no matter what happened in the process. Okay. Gilgamesh. Okay, so the guy's dead. The Beast is coming in. The Riker drops the scattering field, gets his butt kicked in the process, beams Picard up. All's well. Right?
And it ends well. Except for the death of Dathan.
Do you think they left him there, or they...
I think they probably did whatever... They probably have some type of ceremony. I think they would have got him back or done something. Whatever ceremony they have for him. Or maybe that is the ceremony itself, is you know, that you go down to that planet to die. I don't know. Who knows what their whole deal is. But
yeah. I mean, within half an hour, the beast will be chewing on Free Step corpse.
Nice. Right.
There you go.
If that's what the beast does, the beast might just want things to die.
Unfortunately, like how Kirk ended up, right? He wasn't buried, just put aside, bit of rocks.
Until he was brought back by the Borg.
I'm sure the wolves got him before the Borg got him.
Hmm. No, he was definitely brought back by the Borg. He wrote a book about it himself.
did that book also have him like meeting God and punching God in the face?
I'm sure it had something like that. I know that the book before that book had him meeting some half Vulcan, half amazing hot other woman and getting married to her, even though she was like 40 years his junior. Like, I know that William Shatner wrote a bunch of really self-serving fanfic around the time of his TNG death.
Imagine that, self-serving, huh? Anyway.
He's probably just trying to hopefully get it picked up, right, for movie production. And then he thinks, yeah, I'll have to have these hot wives and some very graphic scenes with them. That sounds good.
Sounds good to me. So Picard comes back to the bridge and he tells off the Temerian first officer in their own language, no less. I think it's kind of funny. Picard figured it all out and knew exactly how to tell them the story of Data's honorable death, I guess. And that's it. Morath with sails unfurled.
I do get the impression that Picard basically knew how to communicate this to them, but had nothing else up his sleeve, right?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Had they said, okay, yeah, thank you very much, and we'll pop over next Tuesday, he would have been, whoa, no speaky Temerian.
Frodo, when Gandalf came, they don't get that. They don't get that part. They're like, what?
Yeah. We must do this again. Maybe some tea, Earl Grey? That's it, guys. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
Hey, oh, by the way, except that it ends, right, with Picard in his ready room, and then Riker comes in, and he does his usual, ooh, a book, very similar to his, ooh, you listen to music, as if, you know, Riker is miseducated half-wit. They seem to like to have that impression given off.
You have such that's a strange view of that. I always assumed it was just like Riker saying, wow, you're reading like this type of book. Not like...
What do you mean, one without pictures?
I don't know what a book... Oh, God.
Well,
No, like instead of a pad, right? Because he picks up...
Right. It's all the...
A physical book.
It's just that Riker never comes across as cultured, whereas Picard always comes across as cultured. And maybe it's a bit of an easy dig at Riker. And also, I mean, I'm not saying that jazz isn't culture, by the way, here. But there's even the bit in...
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Yeah, I'm hitting on the jazz. There's even the bit in in First Contact, right, where he mistakes from classical music. And I always think that what's going through Picard's mind is, Dumbass. Corrects him.
Do you know nothing, number one?
Yeah, I think that Picard probably has a higher view of his first officer. He knows that even though his culture is different, he might be cultured in a different way, but he's still got his things.
He's still the beard of power.
He's still got the beard of power.
Beard of power. Okay. Well, then, I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with the guests being higher than us. Chris, go ahead. How would you rate this episode?
Man, there's no rating that I would give this episode besides a 5. This is one of my favorite episodes of The Next Generation. And I feel like all my favorite episodes come from 5th, 6th season-ish. And this is one of the top ones on my list. I watch this often. I love it. I think that it's great. It speaks to me as a person who loves language and loves stories. I think that they came up with a very clever way to tell this story and kind of involve metaphor and figurative language. I will show this to my kids as an object lesson in what figurative language can be, and talk about, you know, watching this episode multiple times and being able to uncover the deeper meaning underneath the thing. And I think that it is a little silly at times, as far as like Picard being able to come back and just speak their language. And some of the plot holes are huge. Like, how would their entire language be based on this? But the story, for what it is does all the things that I want Star Trek to do. It intrigues me. It gets me thinking about other things, and it carries me through in a decent plot with characters that I actually like and enjoy spending time with. So it does all the things that I want Star Trek to do for me. I like it. I watch it again and 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 again. So I'm going to give this a 5 out of 5.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, you know, some parts of it does kind of slow down, but I do like the episode. But for some reason, I seem to think I liked it better in the past than now. There's really not much to say on this, so I'm going to be brief. I can't say that it's really a 5, but it's a little better than a 3, so I guess, gee, what's left except for a 4? So I'm good with giving this one a 4. I will continue to watch it. It's still a good episode, but that's where I land. What about you, Doc?
Okay, so this is interesting, because I came in thinking, oh, this is a 3. I thought it was just an average, kind of like a bog standard episode of TNG, but actually it's not, right? It is better than that. And I would actually go as far as saying that after our conversations with Chris, he's convinced me that it's significantly better than that. I think I like it more than you, Lou, but I don't think I like it as much as a 5, which leaves me in a bit of a pickle, because there's not much room between you and a 5. So I think, unfortunately, I'm going to come down on 4 out of 5. I think it's a good episode. I think that there's a lot of stuff going on, and we've had chats, and, you know, even I've kind of stumbled across things in my mind as I've been discussing throughout this last hour or so. I have no problem with this being used in a way of getting across this story, rather than it necessarily being about, you know, hey, you know, what does a how can you possibly write a recipe down in this particular language? What are you going to have? You're going to have, you know, Darmok and Gerard of flour and something else of sugar and mix it for however many hours. But that's a minor gripe. That's neither here nor there. I think it's good. One thing I want to point out is that, in addition to the wonderful new credits and a smart little jumper, I think the performance by the two main, you know, performers this episode really could have, were great. And I think without the very strong performances, both in the co-stars, well, the guest stars, and also by Picard, or Patrick Stewart, I suppose, more correctly, I think this episode could have ended up a little bit silly. And I don't think at any point you watch this and you think that it descends into silliness. And I think that's a real achievement when you have, you don't have a huge amount to go on in terms of the actual words being said. It all relies on how you deliver them and the reactions and people becoming frustrated with each other. And I think the performances are certainly top notch.
Okay. All right, 4. 4 it is. All right, so Chris.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you were able to read what I was putting on the screen, but I don't see you again this season. What's up with that?
I don't know, man. I'm a last-minute guy. I've been on here, 7 times? And I think I've only been scheduled for 1. Maybe 2.
Yeah.
I wasn't scheduled for this one.
Don't let that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, it's better to ask for forgiveness than to admit ignorance. But I don't know how it happened, or if it happened wrong.
You got Jim Big for this one is all I was saying, Dr. James. Yeah. You can let the rest of that out.
What was that? I didn't catch that.
Yeah, you're fading out. Let it go. But, okay, well, I mean, the next...
I think I come on for Fistful of Datas. You definitely probably have me down for that one. And I'm willing to come in for anyone that you need me on, as long as it's on a Wednesday or a Thursday. And after three.
Okay. Fistful of Datas. When does that one come up?
Season six, end of season six. Well, maybe two-thirds of the way through season six.
You told me you had me written down for it. Now, whether you actually do...
Oh, here it is. Fistful of Datas, episode 8. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm an idiot.
Oh, well, it's okay. Well, the next thing I got available right now is a Masterpiece Society. Ethics. Ooh, Ethics. I like that one. A Perfect Mate. And your personal favorite, Chris. Imaginary Friend.
Is that my personal favorite?
It's got to be. How could it not be?
Why would that be my... I don't know. I don't remember hating that episode. I think I like it. I'm just interested to see why psychologically you think that's my favorite.
Sarcasm. You know the stuff you put in coffee that isn't real sugar? You know, sarcasm.
Oh.
God,
I would do all of those.
I'm dying today.
I think I offered in season two to be your permanent third guest host.
Yeah, I remember.
But you're a two-man podcast guy, not a three-man podcast guy.
Because it'd be four-man podcasts with guests. So, oh well.
Or you could just go the UP2 way and just say, we ain't doing guests no more.
I couldn't go UP2 way because I can't keep the schedule going. I mean, I can't make the schedule work out to save my life. So, but who's doing the editing now?
All three of us.
Oh, okay.
Well, four of us when we're all four available, but right now the three of us.
Yeah. Well, see, that's another thing. You guys are lucky, you know. At least you know.
Spread it out, man. I can edit, Lou.
I know you can. All right. I wish I could be... Oh! Oh, hey. You're not going to believe this. In the next following maybe 3, 4, 5 weeks, they're going to be readjusting my schedule, possibly, and I may have Sunday, Monday off. Guess what that means.
What does that mean? Nice. Blue Track Show's coming back?
No.
I don't mean it. I thought it was coming back. But it doesn't necessarily mean
listen to your shows, but I do.
He wants to try and interview the guy who did that Axanar thing. You know, it's not gonna happen.
I want to grill that guy and say, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, I'd like to talk to him too, but I mean I just don't think he will. But that probably I wanna start it back up. It's been long enough since Brian's been gone.
Well, what does that mean, Lou? What is Sunday Mondays off mean?
Upper Pylon records on Sundays.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had to bow out on a couple shows what I was supposed to do, and because I'm like, yeah, but should I take a point? Oh, I can't take a point. So yeah, no,
like I say, we've kind of taken a tack of no guests. You know, we've been doing no guests, but we've been bringing other podcast hosts on occasionally. You know, Dan from 10 Forward has helped us out, filling a couple spots occasionally. So you let Blair know. There are a fair few people we'll still let on.
Good, good, good. Okay, well, unless we don't have anything else, I'll put you in for the Masterpiece Society.
Okay.
But
how long do I have till then?
That's
at least a year
and a half. Let's see. Ethics or The Perfect Mate?
Do I want either of those?
Yeah, which do you think?
The Perfect Mate.
You want The Perfect Mate first? Okay, if I don't get anybody from Ethics.
He doesn't want a Perfect Mate.
You've got that, though, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
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 At this point, Lou, you've seen my pictures, right? Do you even pay attention to my Facebook? You don't pay attention to my Facebook.
I don't think I've seen it for a while.
Oh, man.
I get on Facebook very few. I sometimes will post something real quick and then I pop off.
We went on holiday recently too, and so there are a lot of new pictures of my wife on there. She's definitely the perfect mate.
I will definitely check that out.
I mean, I don't want you to check my wife out, but you can check out my Facebook if you want.
Yeah. Oh, look at his wife. Anyway. All right. Well, hopefully you guys are doing okay, but I still want to keep ahead of you. I'm trying to keep ahead of you.
You're not going to do it. We're going to beat you.
I don't know, man.
We're not stopping. We take no breaks.
I know.
We're a machine.
God love you for it, but I can't do it.
We took a 1 week break over Christmas, and then we're like, all right, back to the grind.
Boom, boom, boom. Wow. All right. Well, you guys have a good night.
A renegade officer threatens a critical peace mission.
She has no business serving on any starship.
But is she the link to a Federation conspiracy?
There's more going on here than anybody on this ship realizes.
Now, Picard must defy Starfleet orders or face a terrorist attack.
You have 1 hour to withdraw.
This mission will end in bloodshed.
Starfleet Sabotage on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Hey everyone, why don't you join us next time as we review Season 5, Episode 3, Ensign Row.
Ensign Laren.
Woo!
Ensign Great Row. Episode. Ensign Row.
Great episode.
And we have our semi-new guest. Oh, really? Why?
Is that not the one where she and Riker go at it?
No, that's where she comes on for the first time.
Yeah, but Chris is here thinking, yeah, and? Why would that not be the episode where
exactly when Riker attacks. Right when he sees you, first time. Sorry.
This is when Riker's being racist and, you know, getting her to remove her earring and stuff.
Yeah.
Pierced belly buttons on our ship.
Yeah. That's two unexplainable relationships. Riker and Ro and Worf and Troy.
Worf and Troy is completely...
read
him Zadi too, sir.
I was going to say, no, there was a little... seemed like there was a little build-up to it, but I don't remember. I have to get...
Fistful of Datas is one of the first big lead-ups to it, I think. Because she's helping him with his kid. They're hanging out. Of course, sexy Klingon, sexy woman, spending time together, doing fun holodeck things. They're going to fall for each other, man. Can't hate on that.
Okay, guys. Good night. And thanks for coming on again, Chris.
Oh, man. It's all my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me on.
All right.
Appreciate what you do.
Anything else, James?
Should we actually close the show properly?
So, I did say come on for Ensign Row. Take care and good night.
Good night.
Shaka went lost.
His arms open. Oh, good lord.